702.
Weekend Breakfast with Refilwe Mpakanyane.
Live, online,
smartphones,
DSTV channel 856,
92.7 and 106 FM.
It's 9:36 on the Saturday edition of Weekend Breakfast. The final 24 minutes of the program are going to be spent in conversation with Shantini Naidu. Shantini is a former Sunday Times journalist. She is the author of Women in Solitary. And she's, you know, she's written today a book that is so incredibly important. Women in Solitary, Inside the Female Resistance to Apartheid. But, you know, the book was a result of observing the kind of storytelling and coverage around the life of the late Winnie Madikizela Mandela in the run-up to her funeral, and I guess post that. But essentially, Mam Winnie's funeral prompted Shantini to write about a lesser-known trial in 1969 called the Trial of 22, where women in struggle during the struggle triumphed in their way, survived despite horrible inhumane conditions, conditions in detention, as well as torture. And of course, the late Winnie Mandela was among those women. And what Shantini did was then to interview and speak to the remaining four cohort that were amongst those 22 people who were on trial in 1969. And they were all on trial, accused of treason for the most part, charged under the Suppression of Communism Act of 1950. And it's a fascinating story and an important one in which the author has essentially archived for us the remaining stories and sort of first-hand accounts from those remaining trial accused. Thank you so much for your time this morning, Shantini Naidu. And thank you so much, actually, for sliding into the DMs and reaching out and saying, hi, Refilwe. let's have a chat. Here's a copy of my book, because, of course, you have been nominated in the nonfiction category, or longlisted rather, in this nonfiction category of the Sunday Times CNA Literary Awards of 2021.
Yes, Refilwe, you know, it's a funny story, but I've been listening to the show for so long, and the interviews have been so in-depth and really beautiful. And last week was, I think, Kamar, which is also on the long list.
Yes.
And, I thought it is an important story. And I always say it's not my story. Mm. I'm sharing the story of these brave women, as you said. And also, I think what's come out since the book was published is that it's the story of many of these foot soldiers, or the ordinary men and women who were part of the movement, you know. And there were thousands, many trials. I mean, this one was significant because it was Winnie Mandela and her compatriots. And also that the fact that it was a triumphant trial, that they weren't sent to prison for longer periods, but, you know, still spent nearly 1.5 years in detention.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, speak to us about that that triumph. And, you know, we use the word triumph because, as you say, they weren't sentenced, or they didn't spend much longer in prison or in detention than they could have or than they did. But those were some horrific conditions that they lived under. And, you know, those women that you've covered and that you've interviewed for this book are Joyce Kakane, Rankin, Rita Nzanga, Shanti Naidu, who you do touch on the fact that, you know, the similarities between your own names and how fortuitous it was for you are Shantini Naidu. One of the women that you write about in the book is called Shanti Naidu. And just that dint of a few letters short opened up a lot of doors in being able to tell the story. And the final woman that you spoke to was Nondwe Mankahla. Just talk to us about, you know, the conditions under which they were kept and detained, and how they were especially cruel.
So the women in the story, who are now in their 80s, You know, they came up in the reporting on the trial of 69 when Winnie Mandela passed away. And what was really interesting about the trial is Shanti Naidu, again, who I'm not related to, but I was also intrigued by her, you know, the similarities in our name.
Yeah.
And Manondwe Mankasa, who's in the Eastern Cape, they actually were called as state witnesses and refused to testify against their comrades, whom they didn't all know. They were not familiar with each other. You know, it was during those times of sweeps across the country when people were just detained for any sort of mild activism, you know, whether it was even having banned material in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
So these were activists. They were, you know, doing the work of the ANC and were very committed to the struggle. And for that, the detention included solitary confinement, and that's why the name of the book is Women in Solitary.
But, yeah.
They were kept by themselves at Pretoria Central. They did not see their families. They did not see even their lawyers often enough. It was usually just before the trial days, which was 3 times in 1.5 years.
Mm.
And the only people they interacted with were the apartheid security police, who would, as you can imagine, interrogate and torture and use all sorts of mental warfare against them to try and get them to testify against each other.
Yeah,
quite horrible.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, in you write so eloquently in just in the very beginning of the book that, you know, Winnie Mandela herself remembers this period, and she's also quite she also remembers this period not fondly, but, you know, with a lot of appreciation for the sacrifice that Shanti Naidu as well as Nondwe Mankasa did make, because they were called up to be witnesses. So of the 7 people on trial out of that 22, 7 of them were women, and then 2 were expected to give to be witness against the other woman. And she describes Shanti Naidu this way. She says, it's Shanti Naidu whom I still see vividly in my mind. Her hollow eyes, her thin arms hanging loosely out of that pale, yellowish, sleeveless dress, her slanted head when she craned her neck in the dock to hear Justice Becker on that memorable day, and when she declared in a firm voice which left no doubt, how I loved her always, even more now. My admiration and respect for her doubled. Only a person who has been through solitary confinement would realize the amount of sacrifice that lies behind those words. And of course, those words were, I do not wish to give testimony. I'm now paraphrasing, and endanger my friends or endanger my comrades. Such evocative words. And you do, of course, in the book, go on to interview and speak to Shanti Naidu and what was in her mind when she uttered those words, despite, as you said, that not only physical torture, but that psychological torture of knowing that or feeling that anything could happen to you, right, in detention. You know, just put us in the picture in terms of the conversation with Shanti Naidu and the person that you met when you went to her home to interview her and get her firsthand account of her time in detention, and specifically the decision to not turn witness.
Yes, sure. You know, the most interesting thing about all these women, and particularly Auntie Shanti, as I call her now, she's still in contact, and she's really just an amazing human being, part of a very big struggle family. And in fact, the family's resistance goes back many generations.
Mm.
Her grandfather was one of those who stood along with Gandhi in the days of indenture in South Africa. And the most interesting thing for me was that they all completely humble. They don't take too much credit for what they've done. They don't consider it to be, anything more than sort of civic duty.
Sure.
It was what they had to do and what they needed to do. And, you know, it's interesting because there were many people who didn't do anything, who weren't able to do anything. And because of the risk, I mean, you know, you think about even with Mamuni and her little children, there are mothers who are completely justified in not leading this political life because of the concern around their kids.
Yeah.
However, they did make those sacrifices, and that's what really stands out about them. And, you know, it's still, even till today, if I hadn't stumbled across the trial and their names and gone to interview them, including Joyce Sigakane Rankin, who was a journalist at the time and had the most amazing story to tell about her experience, they were just carrying on very quietly with their ordinary lives at home. And it really just speaks to the humility and also the, you know, it's, activism now is very visual. It's very, it's something that we see. Social media has blown it up into, you know, a very, the presence of people who are involved in activism now, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
You can see a lot of it. But in those days, it was really done very quietly, obviously under their banning and things like that. But also just from a place of, this is my country duty and this is what I have to do. And that was it.
Mm. We'll talk about, you know, how the fact that they were women, how their gender in detention and imprisonment was essential, or detention rather, you know, was weaponized against them and used so brutally against them. But, you know, to the point of the subjects of your book being humble and, you know, taking it for granted or saying, you know, my part in the struggle was, of course, to be expected. It's my country duty. Did you ever ask them directly or get a sense around their thoughts around why women's stories, or her stories, as you call them in the book, are so undertold in the contemporary South African context and are so underdocumented? Because even, you know, we do have those central figures that we sort of hang our democratic story, stories and myths on. But even those, whilst we lionize them and even adore them, even those stories, it's, you know, kind of ring quite tinny. There's lots more substance that could stand to be put into those. But it seems as though when it comes to her stories and women's stories, we just haven't done the work. Was there any sense from the woman that you interviewed why that is? Why have we done this as a country?
You know, the fact that they haven't thought about putting it down for themselves on paper. I mean, I know Mom Joyce, because she is a journalist, was a journalist, and she did write about Soweto in the 1960s and 70s, in that, just after her detention.
Mm-hmm.
I think they, you know, if they for themselves didn't regard it as something absolutely heroic, which it is. It's almost as if the way that the world frames women's stories is that, you know, they are sort of quiet on the sidelines, and it takes quite a big effort to be able to put this out there, mm-hmm. and also to be able to very bravely talk about the work that you've done. And it was done in a very, very subtle way. I mean, if you think even about, and I think the basis of the story is about how the reporting around Winnie Mandela's death was very skewed, and it went in so many different ways. And, you know, it's the same for these women. I've only come across more detailed studies in academic work.
Okay.
There isn't very much that's been told in South African stories. I mean, if we're looking at Charlotte Makete's stories today, mm-hmm. You know, it tells you what was going on. So although the struggle was definitely ongoing around the world, especially the feminist struggle, it was something that existed for years. You know, we've known about the suffragists and the various women's struggles around the world. I don't think they would have an explanation, but they probably didn't think it was something worth talking about at that stage. We obviously know differently, and which is why they didn't pursue it themselves. Which is again why I say I am pursuing their story and many others. It really is a microcosm of many other women who were valued around the world, and not only in South Africa. Worldwide, there is a gap.
Yes.
And I think it's up to us, you know, who have an interest in this kind of work to go out and do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you know, ultimately, as you say, the story deals with those lesser told stories of women in struggle, but the vital role that they play, right, in propping up, you know, systems or structures of resistance, in this instance, against apartheid. But, you know, to that point, that resistance and the political organizing all takes place under cover of the seemingly sort of ordinary and benign domestic lives of women who are seemingly just keeping the home fires burning. But there's so much more happening under the surface. And once you're awake to that possibility, then you're also awake to the need to tell these stories even more. I just wonder, Shantini, with, you know, having written this book, what and you know, now being long-listed, for the and now being longlisted for these awards, the Sunday Times CNA Literary Awards for this year, when people pick this book up, what are you hoping to ignite in them? Obviously, an understanding and appreciation of this work, the work done by these humble women. But is there something further that you'd like people to walk away with or carry with them?
Absolutely. I think for me, it was a personal search for a part of history that I didn't know about. And I hope it's the same for others in South Africa. And, you know, we see really amazing books that are coming out now about our current situation. And I love the recent launch of The Black Girl's Guide to Corporate South Africa.
Yes.
beautiful book as well, mm-hmm. which tells you how to navigate corporate South Africa in a very unique environment. South African society is a very unique we've got unique circumstances that we've got to go get through. And one of those things, and it is something that's been studied around the world, is about our psychological healing as a nation.
Sure.
That is the other main impact that I'd love for the book, is to think about how the multiple generations of South Africans have been affected by apartheid, whoever they are,
mm-hmm.
and whichever side of the gender, culture, race spectrum that you sit on.
Yeah.
To know where we come from, it's just really important. It changes the way that we operate in the world. And it's something that, for instance, I would love young girls to know about, because they almost, we know the big story. We know the apartheid story. We know the 27 years that Nelson Mandela spent in prison. But
mm-hmm.
when we know all the little details, you know, you spoke about the woman keeping home fires burning. There actually has been a study in KZN around it as well by Professor Kalpana Hiralal about the impact of women whose partners were imprisoned,
yeah.
and how those children were raised, and,
yeah.
and you know, these children are you and I. They're the colleagues, they're the people that we see and we interact with every day. So it's really important to know where we come from without mm-hmm. you know, without having those big macro stories alone shaping our the way that we think about the world.
Yeah, and of course, you know, exactly to that point, you do address matters of trauma in the book, and you note, of course, that, you know, Joyce Sikhakane Rankin, of the four women that you did speak to, was the only one who received professionals, counseling, psychological counseling, in order to deal with the trauma that she'd endured. And just one of them being the fact that as she was in detention, and she'd been torn away from her child, from home, and, you know, at some point, a 3-year-old Afrikaner toddler was brought in to remind her of her son, Nkosinathi. And I guess the thinking is that she'd break down in order to, she'd eventually break down under the psychological and emotional and physical trauma and torture. And you just wonder what a depraved place a human being has to be in order to break down, you know, the person of another race even further, or to obliterate their attempts at struggle against your system. You would then bring in a child of your own race, perhaps your own child, you know, if you work at the prison, into an interrogation room, into a prison where human mm-hmm. rights abuses are being committed. So it really, as you say, this, you know, no one escaped this whole this apartheid project unharmed, or at least undamaged, right?
Yes,
as much as
absolutely.
You thought they were doing damage.
Yes, and you know, it's very interesting. There was a just a recent article that I read about people who experience trauma and becoming senile in their latter years. And just anecdotally, one of the chief torturers, one of the chief, apartheid security branch senior officers, Roy Sonopul, who's in the book as, he was very central to the women's detention and torture. And he also died of very young and was senile. And it could only be that from that sort of double trauma, I imagine, of carrying out these acts, even though it was committed by the person who felt that they were doing their country duty.
Yeah.
Mom Joyce always talks about how it was not against individual people that they held grudges or anything like that, because that it they were part of the system.
Yeah.
So it was, it's to almost reconcile that in our minds as well, that this was a system that was so wrong and so deeply entrenched in people that they would do things like that.
Yeah.
And, I've spoken to Nkosinati Oliver, as he's known, and the impact on him as a 50-odd-year-old today was just unbelievable. Mm. And it's really,
it's apparent.
It's something that it tells us where we are today and why we are here, I think.
Yeah. Let's take a call. We've got Marge on the line from Northcliffe. Thank you so much for holding and for calling in, Marge. Welcome to Weekend Breakfast. What's your comment?
Thank you. Morning, Rafi.
Morning.
And thank you for this wonderful interview. And well done to the author for producing something that we so need in South Africa. I'm a history teacher, and I had been teaching the 50s and 60s resistance to apartheid South Africa, and asked my pupils, who are girls, to do a research project on women in the struggle. And I asked them just to research the women, what she was involved in and what her achievements were, but the repression she faced.
Yeah.
And it was such an eye-opener to these youngsters who are of all races. And they covered people like Joyce Rankin, Fatima Meer, Amina Kachalia, Albertine Sisulu, Dorothy Masuka, Miriam Makeba,
sure.
Just looking at not only what they did, but the enormous personal sacrifice. And the girls' question was, what happened to their children? And we started talking about people like Gillian Slow, daughter of Ruth First, writing a book about just what it was like to have the police take away your mother at your birthday party.
Yeah.
And I think it was such an eye-opener for these girls not to just think of, the women marched in 1956 and then, they handed a petition and went home.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the consequences of...
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your call, Marge, and for your contributions as well. Shanthini, of course, time is never enough when we're having conversations like this, but really, thank you for the work that you've done. I look forward to seeing the series, the documentary, and more of these. Pressure, no pressure.
That would be absolutely wonderful. I really think that's the next step, to give the woman in the story their flowers. That would be, while they're still alive, would be absolutely amazing. I think it's, like I said, the stories are really just remarkable and identifiable. And I was just so grateful to be able to spend this time with them. But thank you. And I had goosebumps now when Marge was talking about the work that the girls are doing at school. I think that's one of the really, really big outcomes from the book as well.
Oh, time not on our side, but that's Shanthini and I do.